Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. There won't be any opening remarks from our guests, so we'll go directly to questions. As usual, if you have a question, please raise your hand so I can head you to the queue. When you're asking your questions, I'll ask you to please stand so we know where the question is coming from. Please introduce yourself, mention the media you are representing, and specify who should be answering your question. The floor is now open, and we're going to start with Terry Jones. You can go ahead. There's no mic this year. We have a room mic.
Terry Jones, the Edmonton Sun for Canada. Can you just, it's your third trip in 3 years as a head coach in this league. Can you talk about something pretty good for your resume? But there were three really unusual sort of runs, especially with that 1-7 start this year. Can you just discuss the whole journey?
Yeah, I would just, is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would just, to be honest, I mean, the truth of the matter is you have to have a lot of great people around you. I mean, I think John would say the same thing. It's, I've been really fortunate to have the ability to have a great staff, first and foremost, have a great organization in both cases that produced an environment to allow us to be successful. And every team was different, you know, as you mentioned, and there's different obstacles, but every team has challenges and obstacles to overcome. And just blessed with a good group of people that quite frankly, you know, deserve, you know, most of the credit they do, because they coach their guys, they coach their rooms every day, and they get them ready to play. And and a good group of guys in the locker room, and a great organization that allows us and affords us the resources to be successful.
But you had to do a stadium a few years and 1-7 start.
Yeah, we weren't very good to start. Had a lot of changes and trying to figure it out. And we decided to go really young, you know, when we took over and try to build something that was sustainable and have try to keep long-term success and focus and not just short-term, which is a tough blend and medium to arrive at. It's not easy. So, but you know, as far as the stadium, those types of things, I've said before, I mean, John had his challenges this year. I mean, everybody has challenges. You know, ours might be different than somebody else's, but we're no different than any other team.
Arash Madani.
Right here for both of you guys, Arash Madani with Sportsnet. Of the 9 teams in the league, both of you are head coach and GM. How much of an advantage is it when you get to shop for the groceries and cook the meal?
I'm not sure it's an advantage. It's a little bit more single-minded as far as the direction you want to take. And everybody that's working for you has that single direction. It's a lot easier to get things that you want as far as the grocery list. And so I enjoy it. It's a unique position. And I relish the job that I have in Calgary.
Yeah, I would just reiterate what John said. I mean, it gives you the ability to choose your team and to piece the puzzle together the way that you and your staff, you know, believe is the best, gives you the best chance to have success. We kind of do it differently, and we blend the personnel department, the coaching staff together. There's equal responsibility and evaluation, and we don't separate them. And so we hopefully arrive at a better evaluation across the board. And but at the end of the day, if you can make the decision to build your team, then the buck really falls, you know, with us to put together a team that has a chance.
Hi, Steve Simmons, Toronto Sun for John. You've worked with some incredible coaches over the years, Bill Belichick, Tom Coughlin, I think Wally Buono. Can you talk about what those guys meant to you and what part they play now in your success?
You're right. I've been very fortunate to work with some great people. I think the coach that first made a great impression on me, besides Joe Paterno, I mean, just Joe is Joe, and enough has been said about Joe Paterno, but Cal Murphy, as a player, I played under Cal, and he was a tremendous football coach, and I really respected how he handled the day-to-day functions of the team, and also how he handled the players. Obviously, Bill Belichick, having 1 year with him was a bonus as far as me developing into a head coach because of the structure that he brings to a football team. Wally, well, I base most of my organization and how we do things in the organization from Wally's program. Those three people have had a big impact on whatever I've accomplished in the coaching.
And Tom Coughlin at all?
Tom was an excellent coach. He's a good friend. But you asked me for the three, so I gave you the three.
Matt Schneider from TSN. This is for Coach Huffnagel. Coach, I just want to know, at the end of your playing career, you were with the Rough Riders. Do you remember a young Ken Austin? Did you give him any advice when he was coming into the league?
Very much so. I mean, my first year as a coach, I was a player coach, and that player part of it only lasted three quarters when I tore my Achilles tendon. We had two young quarterbacks at the time, Jeff Bentram and Tom Burgess. They were injured. I brought Jeff Tedford up. He lasted four plays and broke his foot. And in that time frame, Kent walks in and he prepares himself to play. And his first start was against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and in Hamilton, and he won his first start. Had a terrific football game.
Oh yeah, I've told a lot of people that, you know, Huff was my first coach up here. I've got a lot of respect for John. He's really a great coach. Does a great job. He knows the position, obviously, and it was a different game, a totally different game than what I was comfortable with and used to. And you know, having somebody like John to kind of cut the corners, right, to give you the shortcuts that you needed to at least have a chance to be successful early on, instead of going through huge growing pains with a guy that didn't have a lot of experience playing the position, was a huge benefit.
Go to the back. Right, you, sir. Jason Harris from CTV Kent. It's a neutral site game for the first time in a while. Is crowd going to be a factor at all compared to last year? Obviously, do you deem it a lot better situation for your team this time around?
Yeah, it was pretty loud last year. I we're prepared either way. I mean, if there's a lot of crowd noise and we have to go on a silent count, we're prepared. If not, I mean, we don't know what to expect, to be honest. That's the honest answer. So we're prepared to perform either way.
For John Huffnagel, Coach Jim Morris from CFL.ca. 2 years ago in 2012, your team went to Toronto for the Grey Cup. How is this team different than that team? Obviously, the record is a little different. Your roots a little different. But can you compare the two teams?
I don't think there's a lot of difference between the 2012 team and this football team. We won to earn the right to get to the Grey Cup. We had to beat a very good football team in both years. That year it was BC, out in BC. This year, obviously, the Edmonton Eskimos. A lot of players from that team are still on this team. If anything, they've learned from the experience, just like Kent's team did, that, hey, you get to the Grey Cup, unless you win it, you're not a happy soldier. And that's their mindset, and I'm sure that's the Hamilton Tiger Cats mindset.
Will that help this team? That loss maybe help this team?
No question about it. You learn from your experiences. There's been lots of things said about this group of players that wear red and white over the years, and until they do something about it, it's going to keep on being said.
Team like Calgary offer?
Yeah, it's a pretty big challenge. They're great running. They're great offense, period. They're really good in both phases of the game. They block really well up front. They got a great tailback. They throw the ball well. They do a great job game planning. Schematically, they're difficult to defend, and their players understand what they're asking them to do. So, we've got a great challenge in front of us. Our guys know that, and hopefully we're up to the challenge. We'll see.
Gary Lawless.
Gary Lawless from the Winnipeg Free Press. John, you've got a winning percentage over the last 7 years of 702. The only other guys that have been approached that are Wally Buono and Bud Grant. You've won one Grey Cup in that era, and those guys were able to get multiples. How do you determine success for yourself as a coach in your organization?
He's asking about the winning percentage and only having the one Grey Cup compared to other guys that have a similar winning percentage. Just how do you judge yourself as a successful coach?
How do I what?
Judge yourself as a coach having success.
I don't judge myself. That's what you guys do. I just go to work every day and try to do the best job I can. We're, like you said, we have a pretty good regular season record, and we're batting one game over 500 in the playoffs. I'm not so sure there's a whole lot of teams over the last 7 years that can say that. So we lost big games, we won big games. We got a big game coming up on Sunday, and we're going to try very hard to win it.
Yes, Neil Davidson, the Canadian Press. My question is for Kent. Kent, your kick returner, Brandon Banks, obviously is continuing to surprise other teams. Given his stature in a game of giants, really, does he still surprise you with what he does on the field?
He does. The honest answer, when you're around the kid, a young man, I should say, he's really, really competitive, and he plays with a lot of confidence. But some of the things that he does on the field, obviously you can't coach. We're just lucky to have a guy with that kind of talent. Now, that being said, I don't think he's going to surprise Calgary. I mean, they're really good on defense, special teams. They cover well. And we've got a big challenge in front of us to continue to hold blocks and give Brandon a chance. But he's just a really talented young man that's always had to overcome the I'm not big enough talk and too small to play, not strong enough, all of those things, yet he continues to break tackles, make plays, and gets the ball in the end zone.
You have quarterbacks that are going to be making their Grey Cup debuts in seasons where they really, this is their first, well, Zach I know was injured, but relatively their first full years as starters. Can you both speak on what you've learned from your young quarterbacks this year and why they're ready for this stage? Why they're ready for this stage, why they're ready for the big game?
I'll speak on behalf of my quarterback, Bo. Bo has, every quarterback has to have a growing process, and you're judged by it. What do you do in your first start? Okay, well, Bo played pretty good in his first start. Okay, what do you do when you go into a tough situation in the playoffs? Well, when Bo did that, he did pretty good. In the 2012 Western Final, I put him in the game in the middle of the third quarter on third and one play at midfield to throw a 50-yard strike, and he threw the 50-yard strike. He won the starting quarterback job this year and managed games very well, helped his team win. Played his first playoff game as a starter and won that. So, he has the ability to, the game's not too big for Bo. That's the easiest way to say it. He manages it, he makes plays, he'll make mistakes like everybody, but he'll come back and manage the game.
I would say very similar to John's comment about Bo. Zach is very similar in the sense that the game's not too big for Zach either. I mean, Zach's played in a lot of big games. He's a proven winner at every level, from high school through college. He got put on the road in a tough situation before we got him the year before when he was in Toronto and won some tough games on the road. I know because we were trying to catch Toronto in the standings and we couldn't. He clipped off five wins. And highly competitive, wants to be great, prepares really hard. He's very, very unselfish. He's endearing to his teammates. The guys don't ever question whether Zach will come to play and be prepared to play. He hasn't been in a championship game, but we all had to play in a championship game at one point. So it was always our first game. So I don't know that really matters, honestly.
Gentlemen, two-part question. Jay Janner, Global Sports here in Vancouver. John, you were in Toronto, you were in Saskatchewan last year. Further to Jason's question, how different is the game? I mean, it's been great for the CFL and I think for fans in general. I think that's why the game has been so great, the Grey Cup, the last 3 years. How different, though, is playing in a game like that where the home team is in there and there's so much going on all week compared to this week here in Vancouver?
I don't know. The other two Grey Cups we participated in, we were always at the home team's stadium. I just got here last night, so I'll just have to figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, again, it's kind of similar to the answer earlier. We don't really know, honestly, what the environment's going to be like. Hopefully it's a great environment for both teams, and it's exciting for the fans, and yeah, we're just prepared to play a football game.
You anticipate hearing from the BC Lions, would you stand in Dave's way in terms of becoming a head coach, or is there a succession plan to eventually move into the front office?
I think last year when Dave signed a long-term contract with the Calgary Stampeders, it was pretty self-explanatory.
You're both GMs and both former quarterbacks. This is a quarterback-driven league. With the cap now, why is it necessary to still have the neg list? It looks like sometimes there are teams that need quarterbacks and they can't access them because another team will have them on the neg list. Are you in favor of getting rid of it and opening it up so that all those players could be accessed and maybe help the play of the league, especially after a season where offense suffered for both of you?
You go first. You're the
veteran. No, I think the quarterback position is one position on your football team. And if you're going to have a neg list to protect positions, why would you ignore the quarterback position?
No neg list at all.
No neg list at all? Well, then that's something that would need to be discussed in the offseason with the in our executive meetings. I think you have to have some plan, organization concerning international players because there's no draft for international players. I think there would be chaos without some sort of organization.
Yeah, I agree with John. I don't think you got to have some structure to be able to get the international players up here and to be able to have their rights. If it's not the neg list, then what is that process and what does that look like? You know, we'd be open to any scenario in any area for the CFL that improves the game and improves an organization's ability to be more competitive. You got to be careful what you ask for, though. And right now, there is a process to get somebody off the neg list. I mean, if you want a player bad enough, if I want a player bad enough off of Calgary's neg list, well, I can deal with John and try to get that done. I mean, that's part of the environment that we're in. It depends how much you want that player. All right.
Question from Terry Jones. This is for both of you. Well, you both coach below the border, but you seem to have had your ultimate success in a league where, you know, there's more challenges, I think, in a lot of areas. Coaching a CFL roster, and that can you articulate why you guys have been so successful in the CFL and why it seems to feel like a old comfortable glove or whatever?
I've been very fortunate, number one, to get the job in Calgary, that there are certain people in the ownership group that purchased the team years ago. We're friends, and they wanted me to take a look at the job. Having said that, ownership has always been very strong in Calgary since I've been there. I had the great fortune of hiring good people, and Kent mentioned it yesterday, I believe, in an article. Hey, we're one person that give some direction. It's the people underneath you that are helping you determine the direction, but also getting things done so you can put yourself and everybody in a winning environment. And then by getting the players in there, making them believe that they're good and they can win. And so I've been very fortunate.
100% in agreement with John. I mean, you win with people. And the best thing you can do in a position that I've been fortunate to have, first of all, I've been with two great organizations. That's been a huge advantage, you know, for me. Secondly, it's the best thing that I know to do is to find as quality an individual and great coaches as I can find, and try to find every single one as a better coach than myself in their particular area, because we can't, nor could we, nor would we want to coach every position. We'd have an 0-18 record, right? Or I would. So, you know, to be able to get guys like Tommy and Orlando and others. But it goes beyond that. It goes to your personnel department. It goes to your scouting. It goes to the business side. Like I said, are they creating an environment with resource and just the overall direction of the organization? Are we walking a lockstep philosophically with how to build it? And where there's change that needs to be made in order to continue to improve the quality of what we're doing, are they willing to do that? And are we on the same page in those areas? So there's a lot of facets to it. There's a lot of areas to it. But if you have great people around you, then, like John just said, I mean, we're just a small part of that overall huge process. And we have a role to play, but everybody else has a role to play, and they all have to perform at a pretty high level to have success.
For both coaches, just to follow up on Terry's question, when each of you left the CFL, Kent for Mississippi, John for the NFL, did you ever think you were coming back? And when you left, your thought was what?
Would you like me to? Okay. You know, I learned with my experience in Toronto that you don't ever say that you understand where your path is going to be 5 years from now. I don't think that's really different for anybody in any profession. I know that my experience has been right when you think you have a 4 or 5 year plan, the curveball comes in 2 or 3 years or 1 year even. It never works out, at least for me, it hasn't worked out. Maybe according to what I anticipated, not necessarily what I desired or wanted, but what I anticipated, it hasn't been that way. I followed the path that me and my family, quite frankly, felt like was best for us, and some of it professional, some of it not professional. And I've been fortunate to have doors open and been lucky enough to have the opportunities that I've had. As far as this league, it is really a great league to be a part of. There's always a draw, at least for me, there was always a draw back because of the quality of the football, the uniqueness of the game. The uniqueness that the game brings to the fans, it's clearly a Canadian game. And on a personal level, you know, Canada's a great place to live. My kids have spent a lot of years up here off and on. So there's just a lot of draws back. There were a lot of draws for me back to the league. But as far as your path as a coach, I mean, it's a pretty volatile profession. Things can change pretty quickly, and we understand that. And that's what we signed up for. And you know, you got to live with that if things do change.
As far as myself, when I was an assistant coach for Wally in Calgary, there were some years that I had an opportunity to become a head coach, but the request was made so late that I didn't feel it was the right thing to do to abandon the Calgary Stampeders at that time of the year. In 1995, there were 3 jobs opening. I was being considered for all 3. Once all the smoke cleared, I was still an assistant coach with the Calgary Stampeders, which was fine. But I did say that to myself, the next time the phone rings and a head coaching job is offered, I would accept it, no matter what the time of year. And happened to be the New Jersey Red Dogs in the Arena League. And that's why I left the Canadian Football League, was to take advantage of a head coaching job.
Next question from Jim Morris.
Jim Morris from
CFL.ca again. Coach, have you thought about your succession plan? You are coach, general manager. Have you given any thought to when you might step away from coaching and moving into the GM job? And would this game have any impact on that decision?
Might have.
For both coaches, compared to say 10 years ago, I'm just curious to your thoughts on the state of the game, the state of this biggest spectacle compared to years past. You know, Toronto's had some problems with attendance. This game might not be sold out. Where is the state of the CFL brand as you see it? And is it growing? Is it decreasing?
Quite frankly, I'm focused on our organization right now and this year and trying to build what I was hired to build. And I understand the question, but I'm probably not qualified completely to give you a thorough answer, you know, in every level with respect to the viability of other franchises. And unless you're there every day working and managing a budget and working on both sides of the operation or the business, it's really hard to comment on that. And I can comment on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. But as far as, an organization like Toronto and where that's headed, I'm not privy to those discussions at that level. Yeah.
Not only did Kent say that he's not qualified, I didn't hear the question.
He's asking for your thoughts about the state of the CFL right now.
My name's not Mark Cohan.
Drew Edwards from the Hamilton Spectator. Coach Hufnagel, dealing with Kent on a regular basis, as I do, he talks a lot about the importance of culture and establishing a culture and that environment around the team. I'm wondering whether or not you give a lot of thought to establishing culture and how you do that, or is it something that simply just happens organically?
Well, again, someone asked me about the coaches that influenced me, both as a coach-player relationship and a coach-coach relationship, and that's where I learned what I wanted to do as far as how to install the locker room, the culture in the locker room, the culture and the philosophy and the attitude within the coaching staff, within the support staff. So it was all from the experiences I had, both as a player and as a coach.
Ken, just going back to Cornell, what did you like about Luke Tasker there that you thought he'd be able to translate here? And on second down, what makes him the weapon that he is to continue to move the chains?
The first thing that you recognize about Luke is he's just an unbelievable person when you first meet him. And he's very bright. He was a different type of guy in the Ivy League. And I mean this in a positive way, that the Ivy League is there's so much less extrinsic motivation to play there that if you don't find guys that just really love the game, all the other pulls on them, the lack of scholarship, no postseason play, those types of things that are unique to the Ivy League can damper the motivation of a guy that's not truly in love with the game. And what you found with Luke was he just loved the game. I mean, if you were in a room and said, we're going to go play a Nerf football game or flag football game, you know, right now out in the street, you know, put your hands up, who wants to play, Luke will be the first one to put his hand up. I mean, he's just that guy. And he's got unbelievable intangibles. His dad and his family, they're very close. They're awesome family. Steve's a wonderful man and raised Luke and his other kids really well. Did a great job with them. And he's got great hands. He's really bright. He's got time and space ability. He'll catch everything. He's tough. We can move him around. He's got a high football intelligence. You know, just the things that fit well in our offense.
Helped him just being around the game and growing up in the game?
Yeah, it's helped him. It's helped him a lot. And he's been around it for a long time. And he had a pretty good mentor to learn from with his father. I really, really have a huge fondness and appreciation for their family. It's really a wonderful family unit. And it's really why Luke is the way that he is, the man that he is.
Give it okay. Dave Naylor with TSN. Respecting the fact that your jobs are to win games and not entertain people, there has been a conversation about the league, about the entertainment value of the league this year and compared to previous years. And from what I understand, that is going to be a major focus of discussion for the league in the offseason. If they were to ask you about what you could do to the game, and I'm talking about whether rosters or rules or things that are happening to improve the entertainment value of it, what would you say?
I would say that defense coordinators running out of blitz.
Oh, boy. That is a great question, by the way. Yeah, I mean, we're charged with the responsibility to win first and foremost, like you said. But we do have something to sell, and we understand that we are at the end of the day in the entertainment business. Now we get fired if we don't win. You know, that's the catch 22. You know, with respect to that. But the game can be improved. Anyway, I know you know that we're on record, you know, with some of those things, and some of the things that we're pushing for to improve the quality of the game, because the quality of the game can be improved. There's some, you know, I won't talk in detail, but I think there's some low-hanging fruit things that you can grab pretty easily right now to improve the quality of the game. That wouldn't be hard to implement.
Next question from Kurt Benton. Kurt Benton, Winnipeg Sun. Now that you've had a year with it, I was wondering what you thought about challenging PI.
I've enjoyed the change. I think it was a growing process a little bit for the coaches and the officiating. But I believe that the reason it was put in is a good thing. I don't – maybe it needs to be chatted and tweaked a little bit about in the off season. Personally, I hope it stays.
100% for it. We pushed hard for it, as you know, among other things, that we wanted to be challengeable to improve the quality of the game. And you know, is anything going to be a perfect model that you, especially when you initially implement it? You know, the answer is probably no. Like John just said, I mean, it could probably be tweaked and looked at, and we could probably do you know, a better job across the board in areas like this. But it, you know, it won some football games this year for some teams, and if it's the right call, that's a good thing.
Next question will be from Dan Ralph, followed by Steve Simmons. We'll have time for one or two other questions, and then sort of the last one.
Hi, John. Dan Ralph from Canadian Press. You had John Corners for 9 games this year. How does your offense change with him and without him, and what skill set does he bring that makes your offense more potent?
John's a very good football player, but he plays for a very good football team. And I think that's the answer to your question, is that whether John's in the game or not in the game, the Calgary Stampeders are still a good football team. But he does bring an extra dimension. And that play he made last week on the shovel pass is just one illustration of his game-breaking type ability. He's a strong, hard runner. You know, if we can get him into the second level, it can be a long day for the defense. Unfortunately, it's going to be very difficult to get the second level against Hamilton.
Steve Simmons, last call.
Kent, the teams in the East don't run the ball particularly well, and now you come into a Grey Cup game against the best running back in the league. How does that change the way you approach this defensively?
Yeah, I mean, how we run the ball doesn't have anything to do with how we stop the run. I think we're at the top or near the top in run defense. So we make a conscious and definite effort to focus there first, whether we're playing against a strong run team or not. Because if you can't stop the run, even the teams that have stats that show that they have an unwillingness to run, all of a sudden have a real strong desire to run if you can't stop it. So, you know, I'd be careful looking at stats.
But does it change when you're playing the best back in the league?
Well, of course it does. Yeah, I mean, and there's a catch 22 with that. You know, I mean, John and Dave are smart, and you know, it's hard to disguise things and to not tip your hand on what you're trying to stop on a particular down and distance. You need to have enough versatility and variety, though, to make sure that you're trying to stay one step ahead of the play caller on the other side of the ball.
Within the last 2 years, and probably very familiar with this question, it's the Jim Shakey Hunt Memorial question about your philosophy with for players having sex before the game. Considering you both lost your last Grey Cup game, I wonder if you've changed your philosophy and if you could articulate your philosophies.
Well, Terry, the recurring theme or words that have come out of my players' mouths since the start of training camp is to finish. And I would hope they would take that same directive if they happen to have whatever you're talking about.
I've been saved 2 years in a row with great answers by the opposing coach, so I don't really have to comment. I will say, since you brought the focus to me and him, I would say that my wife was at the last Grey Cup like she is this week, and I declined to answer that because we did lose the last Grey Cup. So I got to be careful whichever way I answer that because she's listening.
Thank you, everyone. Now moving on to BC Place for practice. Thank you, gentlemen.